Going Linux, episode 54, listener feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom.
Going Linux is designed to provide you with practical, day-to-day advice on how to use Linux and Linux applications to get things done. If you are new to Linux, moving to Linux, or just thinking about going Linux, then this podcast is for you.
Each month, we publish three episodes. We begin the month with a listener feedback episode. In our feedback episodes, we read listener email, play listener-generated audio, and answer listener questions. On the third Tuesday of each month, Larry appears live on the Computer America show, and we post those shows, minus the commercials, as Going Linux episodes.
In our user experience episodes, we take normally 2 months to explore a topic related to Linux. During the first month, we introduce the topic for new Linux users and recent converts. During month two, we discuss the same topic from a more advanced perspective, for users building their confidence and competence with Linux.
And today's episode is listener feedback. We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done. Okay, Larry, let's catch up on some of the email we've received over the last couple of months.
Yes, and Alex wrote us, "Great show, but," he titled his email. Yes, but. He says, "Hi, Larry and Tom." Hi, Alex.
Hi, Alex.
"Great show. I'm learning a lot from you guys. One thing I hope you can improve is Tom's mic or sound level. Maybe a compressor could help, since Tom seems to slam the meter or maybe has the mic too close to his mouth. Anyway, maybe this is just me, but the distortion makes it a little difficult to listen. But really great show. Thanks for your time and consideration."
Well, Alex, thanks for the feedback, and we did fire the sound engineer. He was really screwing things up, and that was me. I just had my gain set too high, and since it was already clipped, Larry couldn't do anything about it in editing. I hope it sounds better now. Are we all right now?
I don't hear him answer, so let's hope
okay.
So.
Must be good.
Yeah, thanks for the feedback, Alex, and please do let us know how it sounds now.
And next up, D. Biddy wrote, "Good afternoon, Tom and Larry."
Good afternoon, D-Biddy.
He continues, "I love the podcast. I found it about a week ago and have listened to almost every episode already. I'm an XP user who wants to move to Linux, but my wife is very nervous about it. I'm about to get an older PC for free. It's about 6 years old. And I'm going to install Linux solely on this newfound PC. I think if I can get this new PC set up and going, and as I feel more comfortable and confident in it, I think my wife will be more confident as well. Here's the kicker. We both alternate working from home so we can stay with our 4-month-old son. We telecommute using VPN and Windows Remote Access. Our employer obviously uses Windows. Finally, here are my questions. I'd like to set up a wired home network so both computers and eventually a home web server running Linux for a business idea that I have can use our cable connection and still access our work PCs. What would be a good choice in a router that would support both XP and Ubuntu? And if we choose to move completely to Linux, would we still be able to remote in to our work PCs? I know this is a little rambling and you may need some further information to help, so please ask if I can provide it. Thank you for your time, D." Okay, thanks for that, D.
Absolutely. We certainly hope that our last two network episodes have helped you out. Your emails, among those from others, have inspired us to do the networking episodes, and we'll wrap that up in our very next episode. We did write back to D when he sent us the email, and let me read a little bit from our response to him.
Okay.
"Any router you purchase will be compatible with both Linux and Windows. Connect your new router to your current internet connection, per the instructions that came with it. If you are using wired rather than wireless connections, all you need to do is to connect the Windows and Linux computers via the network cables to your router's ports. Linux will recognize the connection within a few seconds and you will be ready to go. Windows should do the same. If you are using a wireless connection, there is a little more to the setup, but it's pretty straightforward too. And you did mention that you wanted to do a wired connection. Regarding the VPN connection to your work, that is also possible. I don't have any experience in connecting VPN except using a dedicated Windows application, so I'll experiment a little bit with connecting my Linux machine to my machine at work if my company doesn't have things locked down so that I can't do it, and as long as I'm not contravening any security policies by doing that.
Yeah.
I do know that if I install the free version of LogMeIn software, and we'll provide a link in the show notes to LogMeIn, on a Windows computer at work, I can connect to it and control it from my Linux and Windows computers at home. This approach eliminates the need for VPN altogether, but requires a computer on each end of the connection, your Linux or other computer at home, and a Windows computer at work. And that way you can control the one at work using LogMeIn. Many IT directors do not trust this kind of connection, so it may not be an option for you.
AJ was having some trouble with something, and I said, you kind of have to read it yourself. I can't look over your shoulder.
Right.
And he said, sure you can. And let's see. I installed GTK VNC Viewer.
Uh-huh.
And about 5 minutes later, he gave me his IP address and his username and password, and bingo, here I'm sitting in Milwaukee controlling a computer in New York.
Yep. VNC is great, isn't it?
Wow.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I hope to put into our networking episode. But I think I included his thing on VNC in this one, if I'm not mistaken. So he wrote up a little thing on VNC for us.
Okay, good. Well, here he has something else.
Yep.
Next up, AJ wrote, I heard you're doing a networking episode, and so I hope I'm not getting ahead of myself, but I didn't know if you would cover the topic in your show, so I thought I would ask if you knew and if you were covering it. Anyway, both my mother and I have Ubuntu, as you know, and I'm now successfully on 8.10, and my mother is on 8.04, so here's the deal. We have one printer between the two of us, and she wants it at her workstation, even though I have a desktop and she has a laptop. Go figure. Anyway, before I had it so you could view files, I put on a public viewing folder, but I don't remember how, and I want to set up a Samba network, but I've researched this extensively and cannot find the same answer twice. So, if you could help me out, that would be fantastic. Anyway, please help. I'm ready to pull my hair out, so please respond. Talk to you later. AJ. Okay, thanks, AJ.
Yes, well, AJ, as you know, we will be covering this in our next episode. You don't need Samba to share printers across a network. Cups will work just fine, and it comes pre-installed and pre-configured on both of those versions of Ubuntu. So you'll be surprised how easy it will be to get this thing set up.
Yeah, and take it from me, you don't have to pull your hair out, just wait, it'll go away.
On its own, yes.
Yeah. And of course, we've already provided AJ with a response, but the rest of you will need to wait. Excellent.
And our next email is from Steven, who wrote, look forward to your next show. Oh, yeah, I believe I heard about the OpenGEU distribution from your show. I installed it on my Asus EEE 701 Surf. It does run pretty good. I had to install GNOME Do quickly before I felt naked, and nobody wants that. It's a pretty snappy kind of eye candy-ish, but the only thing I really miss that I always have in Ubuntu is the Enhanced Zoom Desktop, or Super Key Plus Scroll, which comes in very handy with a 7-inch screen. It did not come with a GUI web browser that I could find. I had to get Firefox from the repos, and the email client is called Clawmail. It's okay. It works. Nothing great. Knowing me, I will put Ubuntu EEE on it as soon as 8.10 comes out for the Tripoli. It seems like every 4 weeks or so I have to try installing a different distribution just to see how good it works on this real pocket PC. Okay, a big pocket PC. I guess I'm just a GNOME Ubuntu ham because I always go back to it. I also installed Pendrive Linux 2008 on a 1 GB drive, and it works great. If it only supported the Tripoli Wi-Fi card, wow. That and Slacks are my two Windows file recovery tools. I have a third, but it's a real small distro with an odd name. Okay, tell Tom I look forward to hearing him as well. Steven.
Oh, well, well, that's nice. Well, thanks, Stephen, and we're glad those small distributions are working for you. And next, Mark wrote, saying, Larry and Tom.
Hi, Mark.
Mark! I recently received a very old Apple PowerBook G3 Black and was hoping to convert it to Linux with Zubuntu so that it could enter the 21st century and my 2-year-old son could use it to learn some computer skills and play educational games, something that he's currently doing with my Ubuntu laptop. However, for some reason, I was not able to get the laptop to boot to a CD. I found a bunch of sites referring to this as a common problem with the Black G3 for some reason. I wanted to see if you have an email for Klaatu, or if you know of anyone else who I could reach out to discuss workarounds. Thanks, and keep going with your show. Mark. Thanks, Mark.
Yes. And Klaatu, of course, for those listeners who aren't familiar with that name, other than from the day the Earth stood still, is the host of the Bad Apples Linux cast at thebadapples.info. I provided Mark with Klaatu's email address, and Klaatu responded. He said, "So, Mark, what you have is a Wall Street G3, which was made before or right around the time of the first iMac, which means Apple was just beginning to flirt with Sun Microsystems' open firmware. So there is a lot of potential problems here. I would like to know more about what exactly your issue is." So Klaatu asked several questions, which he and Mark went back and forth on, I'm sure. And later on in Klaatu's email, he writes, "So, clarifying exactly what's going on, with the info that I have to work with right now, I'm guessing that you either have a wonky CD drive or you have some wonky open firmware issues. So my initial thoughts are, 1. For a wonky CD drive, instead of holding the C key down to boot, hold down the Option key. This should list all devices available, including the CD. Next, try booting off an external CD drive, again holding the Option key rather than the C key. Or try booting off a non-burned bootable CD, just to verify that, yes, the CD drive can boot. I've seen cases in old CD drives where they will act normally. Secondly, for a wonky open firmware situation, you can get into open firmware by holding down the Apple Option OF at boot time. These Apple boot key combinations are pretty complex. Anyway, he continues.
It's kind of like a, I think it's kind of like a control key.
I think so, but you've got to have like 8 fingers. Anyway, continuing on, he says, "This should load up a white screen that looks more or less like a normal Unix terminal, but don't get excited, it acts almost nothing like Bash. Now, what you could do is try to get the laptop into Telnet mode and Telnet an install of Fedora over to it. I do not know for sure that Ubuntu features the ability to do a Telnet install. In fact, I'm pretty sure it doesn't. But if you get the Fedora net install image, you should be able to boot that up and install Fedora on there. You can also get a 32 megabyte bootstrap image of Yellow Dog, and he provides a link that we'll include in our show notes, and try that if you actually get the CD drive in working order. Before I go into all that, email me back with specifics, and he goes on gives Mark some information on how to get a hold of him, and they have gone back and forth with the exchange.
Okay, well, I hope that helped him out.
I sure do, too.
And Klaatu has been a great help to our listeners and has provided email support to both Mark and Laura, a teacher in California, who inherited a couple of Macs. When you sent him a thank you, Larry, Klaatu responded, "No problem. Feel free to refer people to me on any Mac questions. I don't mind at all. This one had me go poking around in open firmware again for the first time in a year or two, so that was cool. Things are going well for me. I listened to the home networking episode with great interest as I'm setting up a Slackintosh server on an old G3 tower my roommate dumped on me. So I hope to learn a little something about the whole network thing at last." And about Computer America, those guys continue to amaze and bemuse the Linux podcasting community, I think. Keep up your great work on that show. Klaatu. Well, thanks, Klaatu.
Yes, thanks, Klaatu. And our next email is from Vaughn, who wrote, "Hi, Tom and Larry."
Hi, Vaughn.
"Over the last 2 months, I have been listening to your shows as I commute to work here in the Philippines. I enjoy the format and have learned some things along the way. I have been using Linux on servers for more than 10 years, and in the last year turned my desktop machine in the office into an Ubuntu box with Vista in a VMware virtual machine for times that I need Windows to see how practical it would be to start deploying it on other machines. The comment I would like to make is several times you have talked about dual booting. As was stated on the recent Computer America show, I would much rather run one of the machines in a VM unless you really need the performance or are working a lot with multimedia. I think you are more likely to use Linux as a new operating system and try things in a virtual machine rather than if you are always booting back and forth. I have had dual boot machines before, but I tended not to use the Linux boot because it was such a hassle to go back and forth. And this way, it's easier to get files between the two operating systems with network shares. Other comment is, if you are going to dual boot, make sure that you use the NTFS or FAT partitioning for storing your files so that they are accessible from both systems. If people do wish to dual boot and only have one hard disk, I think it should be made clear that they do need to have an empty partition on the disk unless they are going to use WUBI. I have had good success resizing partitions using QPARTED from the live CD. Typically, I will either use NOPIX or a System Rescue CD for this purpose. Other nice thing about QPARTED is that you can format an NTFS partition in minutes rather than an hour using the local disk manager in Windows. Thanks for all your hard work to make the show happen, Vaughn."
Thanks, Vaughn. Thanks for your comments and advice on using a virtual machine rather than dual booting. We are in complete agreement with you on this. Using a virtual machine does give you much more flexibility and the ability to share data. Even so, the concept of a virtual machine can be a little intimidating for Linux newbies and computer newbies, so we tend not to recommend it very often. We know it's no more difficult than dual booting, but it just seems more difficult. Anyway, as we promised, we have read your email on the show. Maybe your comments will convince some listeners that are on the fence that they should give it a try. Thanks for the comments, and thanks for listening.
Yes, and just a couple of additional comments about what Vaughn had to say. First, as he mentioned, sharing files between the two operating systems can be accomplished in a virtual machine using the virtual network connection. In a dual booting situation, you can still access and edit the files on the file system of one operating system from the other, even if the files are in the NTFS file system format that's been used on Windows since Windows NT days. Modern Linux distributions have an NTFS driver pre-installed. For example, from the Linux NTFS project, the NTFS-3G driver is an open-source GPL-licensed third-generation Linux NTFS driver that provides full read and write access to all but encrypted NTFS files. Unfortunately, at least in my experience, if you're using WUBI for dual booting, these NTFS file drivers don't seem to work. I think it's because of the unique way that WUBI works. Please, someone out there listening, let me know if I'm wrong. On the other side of the equation, the EXT to IFS, and that is the EXT2 installable file system, is a free utility for Windows that lets you read and write Linux files from Windows.
That's right. In fact, Carlos wrote us an email about this very topic. Carlos says, "Hi, Larry and Tom."
Hi, Carlos.
Hi, Carlos. I think Larry mentioned in episode number 49, Computer America, that Windows cannot see Linux partitions. While this is true in the pure Microsoft version of Windows, there is a small driver for Windows that allows access, read and write, to EXT2 and EXT3, treated as EXT2, in other words, no journaling partitions. It is the EXT2IFS driver, and that can be found, he puts a link here, www.fs-driver.org, and we'll put that in the show notes. Just thought I'd let you know. Keep up the good work. Carlos. Well, thanks, Carlos.
Yes, thanks very much, Carlos. That's very, very good information, and thanks for the link. Next up, AJ wrote us another email in response to a previous episode as well. I know it's been a while, but I have a response to Gabe's question about proxy servers and Tom's comment about me knowing about them. I have reasonably fast internet using my remote desktop access, which allows me to do things on my home computer from school and access sites that the school blocks. The question is, though, what operating system is he using? I did not catch if he said he was using Windows or Linux. For Windows, a good proxy program is called Your Freedom. I know Linux has many different proxy programs, but since I have never had the need to use them, I'm unfamiliar with them, so I feel not as useful in this regard. But if the person wants to try the remote desktop method, assuming sound and a perfect, flawless performance are not the most important things, that I can do. The basic practice behind proxies is rerouting your IP address from one place to another so as to be using another network's internet to avoid aspects of the network you're using. I know my friend was in New York, but under his proxy using Your Freedom, a site he went to said he was in France. Proxies do have advantages, but also many disadvantages. They are reasonably fast, assuming your internet and the other end are fast, but they can be slow for downloads, among other things.
And AJ continued talking about remote control. First of all, we tackle the W word. The program you want is VNC. I use RealVNC. It is a free program. Run the VNC server on the computer you want to control, and then open up a VNC viewer on the computer that you want to use to do the controlling. You will need to know the IP address of the computer you are tapping into, which is an easy matter of simply going to whatismyip.com. Then, if the person has a router, open up ports 5800 to 5900. If there's no router, then this will not be an issue. After that, open up the VNC viewer, type in the IP address, and you're in. I'm not sure what you need to do in Windows to allow remote desktop access, although I know it's a tab in Internet Options under the Control Panel. In Linux, or at least in Ubuntu, there is a remote desktop panel under Preferences, under System, where you can allow remote desktop access and also get a required password to protect your computer from the masses. To access a machine from Linux, try Remote Desktop Viewer. There are other programs, but this one works fairly well. The reason this cross-operating system compatibility works is because Linux, by default, uses the VNC protocol. I found remote desktop access very useful. I hope you do too. Well, thanks, AJ.
Yes, thanks for that contribution, AJ. And next, Mark wrote us a note of thanks, just to say thanks for the tip on Synergy. In my work, I have two PCs on my desk and use both constantly for different tasks. Now I have installed Synergy. I can happily control both without constantly scooting backwards and forwards between the keyboards. It's brilliant. Also, I have my EEE PC as a podcatcher sitting on my desk, and I can happily control it from my desktop keyboard and mouse as well. Enjoying the podcast. Thanks from a UK listener running Ubuntu Intrepid, Mark.
Well, thanks, Mark. And next up, Alexandro has some suggestions for us. Hi. Hi, Alexandro.
Hi, Alexander.
I would like to hear more about desktop-centric topics like how to better use Copete/Pigeon, go in-depth to most popular extensions like Secure Encrypted Talk, or the fun Last.fm plugins. I think that there are many fun topics that will serve your target market. I also wonder if you can give more props to Linux-certified hardware, so recommend and point to the best hardware. They deserve it. Alexandro. Well, thanks, Alexandro. Well, Alexandro, I am not a Pigeon user myself. Larry, have you tried it?
I have, and I've used it, and I don't have anybody else that uses it, so I don't use it all that often, but it works very well. You and I, Tom, we use the Skype Instant Messenger client, and it works very similar to that, except that Pigeon is one of those that works with various IM services out there, so it works with the AOL IM, with Yahoo, and with all those other ones, so it's kind of a cross service instant messenger client.
Well, that's kind of
neat. Yeah, works well. Doesn't work with Skype, though. And Alexandro also provided us some links related to the Linux certified hardware. He says Mandriva has a good hardware compatibility list at hcl.mandriva.com, and linuxquestions.org has one at linuxquestions.org/hcl. And, of course, the HCL stands for Hardware Compatibility List. He continued in his email writing, rather than just point to a big database, I would like you to recommend hardware that your listeners can just go to their local store or eBay and get the most supported hardware as opposed to the latest hardware. I work with newbies a lot, and many people prefer to quit Linux because their Wi-Fi didn't work, rather than go to the store and get a new Wi-Fi card.
Good points, Alexandro. Many hardware and software vendors do not work upfront with Linux to develop drivers to ensure compatibility. As a result, the absolute latest or newest products are sometimes not supported under Linux for a few weeks or even months after they're first released. Users of Linux should consult these hardware compatibility lists prior to purchasing a computer or a printer, a wireless card, webcam, what have you. That could prevent hours and hours of frustration trying to get an under-supported product working with Linux.
That's not to say that only older hardware works with Linux, because there's plenty of new stuff that works too.
Oh, sure. Just look at the absolute newest netbook computers, like the EEE PC and the HP MiniNote, the MSI Wind, the Acer Aspire 1, and many of the Dell notebooks. All of these were first released with Linux compatibility already installed.
You bet. Our next email is from Dino. He provided us with a follow-up on a previous email from him. He says, "Hi, guys."
Hi, Dino.
Hi, Dino. Well, I took your reply on how to set up parental controls using Dan's Guardian. I Googled it and found this great tutorial on how to set it up. Here is the URL, and we'll include that in the show notes. Please share it in the show notes, which I just said we would do, so so others can benefit. Keep up the good work. Love the show. Dino.
Thanks,
Neil. Yes, thanks.
Okay, next up, Steven wrote us to vent about one of our past episodes. Uh-oh. Hey, guys.
Hey, Steven.
Hey, Steven. I'm a heavy podcast listener. Well, you know, a little diet and exercise, pal. I'm a heavy podcast listener and recently stumbled across your feed on iTunes. I've been using Ubuntu off and on for about 18 months now, but otherwise I'm a Windows power user and enjoy it. My Ubuntu use has been sporadic due to various issues that seem to be unresolvable. I've spent hours, days, searching the web and reading posts on the Ubuntu forums to no avail. My issues range from wireless network card support, general networking issues, and video card issues. Well, I'm back having fun now, but my video performance is subpar compared to what this same system can do under Windows. At this point, Steven provided us with some more details on the two systems. He's now successfully running Ubuntu and says, I'm thinking about dual booting my gaming rig, which has an E8400 2GB 1066 MEM and an NVIDIA 8800 GT. I'll only do this if Ubuntu can put out the horsepower to use it. On a side note, I was recently taking a 900 plus mile trip for the holidays and catching up on your podcast when I came across episode 25. I'll admit I was quite put off by your comparison of Vista to Linux. In fact, I was so put off that I stopped listening to the episode and will probably skip it. Although not intentional, I came away with the impression that you were putting up false barriers for Vista entry that don't really exist. Not to be taken as an insult, but I question your status of a power user on Windows. Some of the statements made little sense and didn't ring of someone that lives Windows as a lower level. I'm by no means a Windows fanboy, but I can appreciate the work they do. I live, eat, and sleep in a Windows world, and it works just fine for me. I'm running 5 Windows machines with XP or Vista, and having a blast. My experience with Ubuntu has not been so smooth, but I'm trying.
Hey, Steven. Thanks for the email, and we're happy to have you as a listener, and glad you found us on iTunes. We provided some suggestions for Steven in an email regarding his video performance. Regarding episode 25 on Windows versus Mac versus Linux, I'll admit that the scenario was a bit contrived. That said, I wanted to make the point that a naive purchaser of computers and software who ends up paying list price for everything could be out some serious money. And Windows just gives the user a fraction of what's available in a Linux repository at no charge. It was meant to get people talking about Linux. It achieved that. Most of the comments we've received on the topic have been from people taking issue with the comparison with Mac rather than with Windows. It's good to see the other side represented. Thanks, Steven. Let us know how it goes with your foray into the world of Linux, and thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
A listener who provided us feedback in the past and signed his name KROSS helped clarify that it's not a play on KDE's propensity for beginning the name of everything with the letter K. He wrote, Hi Larry and Tom. Hi Cross.
Hi Cross.
First, it's not K Ross, it's Cross, Ryan Cross. Very, very funny guys. And he writes, blows raspberries and does a smiley face. Okay, I want to say thanks for the answer to my letter on your feedback show. I let my girlfriend, Jill, aka Snook, hear it. You would have thought I was a famous rock star by the way she carried on. It was very enjoyable. I have an update on my laptops. With Jill's, the Avertech 3250, after Googling, I found that Ubuntu 8.10 has an issue with her Video Open Chrome driver. As it stands today, I installed 7.10 and updated it to 8.04 for long-term support. Works great. On a side note, before I met her, she never heard of Linux, but after using it on an outdated desktop, when I asked her what she wanted on the laptop I got her, she will not stand for anything less than Linux. With my laptop, a Compact Presario C500, it came with Vista, but it was dog slow, and I just wanted XP back on it. I was able to do it. but network was spotty and crashed a few times. So after Service Pack 1, I went back to Vista. After trying a few distributions, none of the distributions would see my Broadcom wireless card. Until I got Ubuntu 8.10, this whoopee thing, and what do you know, wireless worked out of the box. I did a full install right away. Next day, I heard your podcast where you had the same wireless card. I have to tell you how happy I am with it. It works, if you can believe it, better than Vista that was made for it. With a wireless hotspot, I get a better connection now. Even the sound buttons, which had a delayed effect that I had come to expect under Windows, really just works as soon as I push it with Linux. It's like magic.
Thanks, Ryan.
And Yaran wrote our last email for the month. In episode 48, you talked a bit about how best to use a new disk on a Fedora 9 system. You mentioned, among other things, the option to use it for large data collections. That's certainly an option, but I'd like to give another suggestion. Fedora, by default, uses LVM, which stands for Linux Volume Manager. Uses LVM nowadays for everything but the boot partition. Maybe other distros do too. I don't know how much of this applies to other distros. Compared to Windows, the file system on Linux and Unix are advanced even without LVM. A single file system tree is made up from partitions instead of Windows legacy drive letters. LVM takes us a step further in removing the coupling between the physical disk partitions and the file systems. LVM collects disk partitions called physical volumes into volume groups. A volume group contains one or more logical volumes. It's the logical volumes that hold the file systems. And these things are dynamic, so if you get a new disk on a Fedora system, you can just add it to your existing volume group. Unless you did something special during the installation, there is just one. And then you can add the additional space to any logical volumes in that volume group. If you just have one single root file system, extend that. You just made your file system larger. It uses both disks, but you don't have to think about it anymore. So I think what he's saying here is that with LVM, you can use the LVM to make Linux think that you have a single partition when you have two different, entirely different disks.
Now, you know, that sounds familiar. I think the old Windows 3.something used to have an option to merge partitions and disks together so they looked like one.
Well, sure, but Microsoft has come a long way since providing that kind of utility, hasn't it?
Oh, that's right.
Anyway, he continues, if you have separate partitions, root and home, decide how much of the space you want to add to each one of them. You don't need to decide about all the space immediately. You can add a bit of it now and keep some to see where it will be needed later on. I'm a command line user. Somebody called me GUI challenged, and I would do this using commands like pvcreate, vgextend, etc. But there is a GUI tool, system-config-lvm, that can be used too. For details, I'll refer you to Red Hat's manual for it. Fedora 9 may have a slightly newer version of the tool, but it's probably close enough. Yaran.
Well, that's great. Thanks, Yaran, for those suggestions.
And before we end this episode, Tom, I'd like to play a promotion for the Linux Expo that I usually attend each year here in the Los Angeles area. It's the Southern California Linux Expo, or SCALE. They have graciously provided our listeners with a discount code which will allow them to attend the show at 40% off the registration. Here's the promo. Have a listen.
Whether you've merely heard of Linux or consider yourself an expert, here's your chance to learn more about it at the Southern California Linux Expo. For 2009, SCALE 7X has added two new tracks for developers and beginners. We'll have over 60 speakers who will cover the latest topics in open source software, and the expo floor will have more than 80 booths featuring commercial and nonprofit organizations showing their products and software. The Friday special sessions have returned with DOCS, the Open Source Conference for Healthcare. Women in Open Source will reprise their conference, as will the Open Source Software and Education Conference. The Southern California Linux Expo is February 20th, 21st, and 22nd, 2009, at the Westin LAX Hotel in Los Angeles. For more information or to register for the expo, visit SoCalLinuxExpo.org. Use promo code CAST, C-A-S-T, for 40% off of your registration, and we'll see you at Scale 7X.
Well, that sounds great, Larry, and you will be attending again this year?
Yes, and in fact, I had submitted a proposal for a presentation that I could do at the Scale conference. Unfortunately, I was turned down this year, but maybe next year.
Yeah, they do have only so many slots open.
Yeah, they said they had hundreds of applicants and only a few slots, so I feel fortunate just to be part of the process and to be able to attend, so I'll be there.
Okay, and once again, that discount code?
CAST, C-A-S-T, and I'm sure they have a place to enter that when you register on their website.
And we will have a link to that website in the show notes.
You bet. And our next episode is the super advanced episode on networking, sharing printers, remote control, and whatever else we can squeeze in.
Yeah, and hopefully we can get most of that done so we don't have to have a super duper advanced. And until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information and detailed instructions with screenshots. Email us with comments, questions, and suggestions. Send us an audio comment by email. We'll play it on the show. And that email is goinglinux@gmail.com.
You can download the episodes from our website, or you can use the Flash Player to play them right there from the website.
You can also get future episodes delivered directly to your computer automatically as soon as a new episode is available. Instructions on how to do that are on the website.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
Talk to you later.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.